This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The deadly chemical attack on a Syrian town has revived international outrage against President Bashar Assad. Assad's forces are accused of carrying out the attack that killed more than 70 people and affected hundreds more, according to the World Health Organization. Some of the U.S.'s highest military and diplomatic priorities intersect in the Syrian conflict: the aggression of ISIS, the stability of the Middle East, our relationship with Russia, and more broadly, the role the U.S. intends to have in international relations. One person here in Vermont who's paying very close attention to these events is Ambassador Robert Ford, who lives in St. Johnsbury. He was U.S. ambassador to Syria from 2011 to 2014, during crucial years of the Syrian conflict. Before that, he spent his entire diplomatic career in the Middle East. Ambassador Ford, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Very nice to be with you, Jane.
Is there any doubt in your mind that the Assad regime launched this chemical weapons attack on civilians?
Absolutely none. They've dropped chemical weapons on that area of Idlib province before. They have been dropping chemical weapons on it repeatedly. The United Nations inspectors wrote a report about that last November, verified it. And U.S. radar, we learned today from CNN, U.S. radar tracking Syrian airspace confirmed that there were Syrian aircraft in the vicinity. So it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
And what do you think Russia's involvement is?
I doubt the Russians approved the use of chemical weapons. That seems unlikely, but they always consistently protect Bashar al-Assad from international retaliation.
Can you explain who the major factions are in the Syrian conflict and how they're aligning with one another in laying blame for this attack?
At this point, there are five major factions. I mean, it's a full list. One is the Syrian government, which is little by little winning militarily, basically controls the western third of the country near the Mediterranean coast. You have the Islamic State, the American soldiers and airmen are fighting with a third faction, which is the Syrian Kurds. So we back that third faction, the Syrian Kurds, against the Islamic State. And then there are two rebel factions that are not Islamic State and not Syrian Kurds. One is connected to al-Qaeda, and one is not connected to al-Qaeda. So it's up to five. It used to be four, but now it's five.
So what now, then, are the options available to the United States in terms of action?
Well, I think the most important thing for the listeners to know is that there isn't a quick fix. There's not one thing that could be done that would solve the Syrian problem. There's not one thing that can be done to stop Assad from using chemical weapons over and over. I think the Trump administration now is having to grapple with whether or not they should do limited strikes, say, by cruise missiles against Syrian Air Force installations. They know which ones drop the chemical weapons. But, of course, if they do that, they risk escalating with Russia, particularly if they injure or kill Russian personnel on the ground, if they happen to be at the Syrian Air Force bases where the Americans strike. So that's a tough one.
To what end would this action be? I mean, what should the U.S. policy be or desired outcome be? Ousting Assad, repelling ISIS, just stabilizing a civilian population?
I think in this case, a very narrow focus in the wake of these repeated chemical weapons attacks would be the best thing. A narrow focus, which is to use limited strikes severe enough to damage Assad's air force and deter him from any further chemical weapons attacks. That's the key word, deterrence. It's not about solving the Syrian crisis, which is going to be very difficult and take a long time. Deterrence, by contrast, might be something that is achievable in a shorter time frame.
Can you look back at what U.S. policy has been in the last 5 years and point to a time when you think a different U.S. response could, if not have prevented this, led to a different outcome?
I think there are two big ones. The first was in the autumn of 2012. I was in government at the time down in Washington, and the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, CIA director, all urged the president to begin providing material assistance to moderate rebels. And there are moderate rebels. There were then, too. Those moderate rebels are fighting the Islamic State on one side and fighting Assad on the other. They're between a rock and a hard place, if you will, and they need help. They needed help back then, too. I think had we done that, we probably wouldn't have as big an Islamic State problem. We wouldn't have as big an al-Qaeda problem as we have now in Syria. Then when President Obama backed away from limited strikes to deter Assad in 2013 after another horrific chemical weapons attack, that encouraged Assad to continue to act with impunity. We all saw the pictures from Aleppo last winter, and that's a direct result of Assad feeling he can get away with basically aerial murder.
Well, and this is, of course, that whole conversation about the red line and where the red line was, and then President Obama not sort of allowing that line to be crossed. And I'm curious if you now think the Trump administration, which was very critical of Obama on that line, is up to this challenge now that the Trump administration is facing it.
Well, this is my interpretation of events from 2013, but I don't think the president, in this case President Obama, really thought through the implications of him drawing the red line in that press conference of August 2012. We certainly at the State Department didn't put him up to it. We were surprised when he said it because it implies a willingness to use military force. And I saw what Donald Trump said yesterday in the Rose Garden with the Jordanian king standing next to him. And again, I worry that they don't understand that words have meaning and words have implications. And the more they threaten, the more they bluster, if they step back, as Obama did, then you lose credibility and foes, whether in Syria or Eastern Europe or Asia, will be more inclined to test you. And it's the testing part, especially in other parts of the world, that get especially dangerous.
Ambassador Ford, you now live in St. Johnsbury. You spent your career in the Middle East, and as we said, we're in Syria. It's a far cry from what life is like in the Northeast Kingdom. What made you want to move to Vermont?
The Northeast Kingdom is about as far away from the Middle East as you can imagine. It's very green. There's no dust. It has four seasons, and it never gets to be 140 degrees in the shade in the summer. So we used to come here for years and years and years on vacation from the Middle East, and we've come up to the Northeast Kingdom to go hiking up around Newark and Willoughby and places like that, Maidstone Park and areas up there, and the White Mountains. And we decided finally that St. Johnsbury had a wonderful mix of culture, Catamount Arts and the Athenaeum, and services. We have a regional hospital here and very good shopping. The grocery stores here are as good as they are in Washington, frankly. So we decided that we would move up here. It's just a much calmer way to live.
Ambassador Robert Ford, he was U.S. Ambassador to Syria from 2011 to 2014. He joined us from his home in St. Johnsbury. Thank you very much for talking with us, Ambassador.
My pleasure, Jane.
Listeners, if there's a comment you'd like to add to this conversation, leave a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us at Vermont Edition. And follow Vermont Edition in NPR One for all our latest content. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gil Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed this program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.